Hello and welcome to part 4 of Beginning Meditation. Thanks for listening and for sticking with me this far. This episode, I've got a special interview with best-selling author and spiritual teacher, Dan Millman. Dan's probably best known for his book, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, which has just recently been made into a movie. He's written about 12 books in all, and I'd recommend each one of them. I'd especially recommend a book called No Ordinary Moments, which offers a lot of advice relating to meditation, but also the whole process of self-improvement and self-transformation. It's worth checking out. So, I've made it this far. and it's the first time I've ever produced a podcast series, so I apologise for any glitches, if the sound quality hasn't been as good as it could be. I've invested in a new microphone which should be arriving any day, so hopefully that will help. but listen, I would like your feedback. I'm making this series for people who are listening who are just starting out with meditation, so I'd like to know what sort of things you want me to discuss, what sort of questions you'd like me to ask people who I interview. And you can contact me by going to my website, which is www.freewebs.com/IHVH. freewebs.com/IHVH. There's a link there that says contact me. If you go to that, you can fill out a form and submit it to me. Any questions, feedback, suggestions, queries, I'd love to hear from you. Just to know that somebody is listening out there in the virtual the virtual world of internet. Anyway, I should tell you that in the next episode, which will be, part 5, I'll be interviewing a good friend of mine and somebody who I consider to be a very influential teacher in my life. Certainly the most influential teacher in my life to date, Ron Clark. And Ron has written a couple of books, A Bardon Companion, which is for supporting material for those people who are following the teachings as expressed in the books of Franz Bardon. And he's also written a book called The Eight Temples Meditation Project, which, if you're interested in Kabbalah and looking into the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and finding out a bit more about that, I'd highly recommend that book. All of Ron's material is also available on his website, which is www.abardoncompanion.com. Abardoncompanion.com. That's A and then Bardon Companion.com. If you want to find out a little more about Ron before the next episode, Ron has spent many years answering questions about meditation, giving advice to students of Franz Bardon, and so he knows a lot of the recurring themes and maybe the recurring problems that might come up for people who are starting out with meditation. He's got a lot of ideas that he wants to share with us, and I'm really looking forward to that interview. I'm going to be interviewing him this Sunday, and so I'll be releasing that episode as soon as I've edited it and done all the business. So I'm interviewing him this Sunday, which is the 13th of August 2006. And so that will be released shortly, so please stay tuned for that. Okay, here's the interview with Dan Millman.
Hello, Martin.
Hi, Dan. Right, I want to ask you what advice you'd offer to somebody thinking about starting meditation.
Very good. Before I do, though, I'd like to address many people, perhaps, listening who tried meditation, like myself, years ago and practiced one or another form of meditation from one or another tradition. Maybe it was putting attention on a mantra or inner sound, or watching the breathing, keeping attention on the breath, or an inner image. There are many different objects of attention one can use in meditating. And sometimes the only object of attention is a conscious observing of whatever arises, as in vipassana meditation, which presumably the Buddha taught, which is just watching all thoughts, emotions, anything that comes into consciousness, noticing that and letting it go, noticing it and letting it go. That is both a very basic and a very advanced form of meditation. But many of us tried one or another kind, and we stopped doing it because we said, well, I got too busy or just distracted or got out of the habit. But often it's because we don't think we're very good at it. We have an expectation that what we're supposed to do is sit down, knit our brows, and somehow quiet our minds so we don't have thoughts. Or we think we're supposed to get some kind of immediate results. For whatever reason, it doesn't feel like a worthwhile use of our time, so we ended up dropping it away. And what I often suggest to people who would like to take up meditation is what I recommend in general in life is to dream big, aim high, but start small and then connect the dots. So sometimes I say, half in jest, that I meditate for at least 15 seconds every day. That is, it's a little of something is better than a lot of nothing. And someone is better off meditating 15 or 30 seconds or a minute every day than meditating for 20 minutes when they get a chance once every couple of weeks. So there are people who get excited about meditation, who go to a meditation retreat and make it a regular part of their day. They schedule it. But the question is, how long will they continue doing it over time? That's why I say never be hesitant about cutting back to a very brief time, but that way at least you do it every day. And meditating at a regular time is quite useful. Our subconscious is almost ready and primed to go deeper when we meditate in a place we know we will not be disturbed, where the phone is turned off, where we really can step into our own sanctuary and step off the world for a time. If we think, well, I'm going to meditate, but I'm expecting an important call or somebody may be knocking on my door or entering the room, we are not going to go as deep. So regularity of practice, and I know I'm getting ahead of us a little bit because your basic question was, what advice can I give someone who is about to take up meditation? But these are some of the basic principles of whether it's returning to the practice or whether it's beginning practice. So I might add to that, we want to go into meditation with an understanding of what it involves, its benefits, but also its limits. Meditation certainly tends to relax us because the mind imposes tension on the body. And when we're subliminally aware of all these thoughts, things we have to do, unfinished business, regrets, anxieties, the kind of mind stuff that arises during our daily life, with only half our awareness on it, it registers as moods. We can get into kind of a sullen mood or a happy mood because some happy thoughts are dancing through there. But when we're aware of the nature of mind, we're more prepared to address that when we sit down to meditate. Someone once asked a Zen master, what is meditation? And he said, just sitting. And that sounds a little enigmatic. But that's essentially, it's not so easy to just sit. Usually we sit and fidget, or sit and think, or sit and daydream, but just sitting in a nice posture, neither leaning forward into the future nor backward into the past, but just sitting in this moment, in place, in the disposition or the posture of enlightenment. Perhaps our legs are crossed in some fancy full lotus position, which is nothing deep and mystical. It's just a very stable posture for those who have developed the flexibility to do so. One can just as easily sit in a chair. One can even meditate lying down. The only problem with meditating lying down, as one might realize, is you can fall asleep. So if you're lying on your back, you know, you may have experienced this, Martin. If you lie on your back, it's a good idea to put one or both arms resting. The upper arm is resting on the floor, but the fingers are pointing toward the ceiling. The forearms are pointing up to the ceiling. That way, if you start falling asleep, the arm falls and wakes you back up. So that's one little tip for meditating lying down so you don't fall asleep. But sitting upright in a good posture, with the shoulders relaxed, the tongue on the roof of the mouth, breathing evenly and naturally, this is very important. And I know when you learn Zen meditation, the teacher emphasizes posture a great deal. The position is very important. Because, see, meditation is not something that's necessarily going to get us to enlightenment. Many people believe if I meditate enough, I'll finally break through in some sense and become enlightened. We might have heard stories about that. But meditation itself is the practice of enlightenment. It's a beginner's practice of enlightenment. Because we sit, thoughts come, we let them go. Emotions come, we let them go. Physical sensations come, we let them go. We don't react, we just observe from the viewpoint of the witness. So that is the practice of enlightenment. So the moment you sit down to meditate, you're practicing enlightenment. And that's the purpose of it. It's a pleasure in itself. Even if you weren't doing it to get anywhere, just sitting is its own benefit, its own practice. And so whatever happens, thoughts coming, wild thoughts, positive, negative, that's all fine. Notice it. Go back to the breathing or the mantra or whatever. That's the best advice I could give someone who is going to be starting this practice.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great perspective to think of meditation as being the actual act of enlightenment rather than striving towards it. And the kind of Zen viewpoint of just sitting, I think just sitting is something that the body does very well, but it's the mind that has a bit of trouble with it sometimes.
Well, again, that's because we think the mind is supposed to be quiet. And,
yes.
But we have to understand we can let the mind be whatever it's going to be. It's like a bubbling hot springs. Hot springs bubble, after all. But we don't have to pay a tribute. We don't have to give a special attention. Whether it's a new idea we have while meditating, if we stop meditation and write down something, well, we may be doing a creativity exercise, but we're not meditating. Meditating is whatever comes, let it flow, let it go, and just sit until the time for meditating is over.
Yeah, I think because a lot of people, like you said earlier, give up meditation after a short while because they're expecting to sit down and have some sort of overwhelmingly blissful experience the first time round, when maybe what you have to do first is work through all of the mind stuff, and then as you get used to that, it gradually starts to quieten down. And then the normal state of the thoughts and the feelings, the emotions going around, is still there, but it's much dissipated compared to when you originally start the process. But it's like any skill, isn't it, or any practice, that you have to give yourself time to get into the habit and the routine of it.
Exactly. And again, like any practice, if you do push-ups over time, you get stronger. It's fairly predictable. Mm-hmm. Anything you practice over time, you'll find some improvement. But the key is to practice it consciously. It's not simply repeating a task, but it's repeating it with a particular intention to improve. Now, when we meditate, the problem is you can tell if you're getting stronger. You can measure it. When we sit down to meditate, we can't always tell whether we're progressing. It's not the same kind of exercise. Some days there'll be more thoughts, there may be more charged things happening in one's life than other times. But the idea that we are better at meditating if we have fewer thoughts, I would probably differ from those who state that. Now, let's talk about meditation and time for a moment.
Okay.
When we are aware of thoughts passing, we have a word for that. We call it boredom. You know, you don't hear young children, you don't hear young kids 3 and 4 years old saying, "I'm bored." Not usually. Usually when they get past 7, 8, or 9, especially into adolescence, that's when young people start fleeing from boredom. That's the worst thing, because what they're really saying is, "I've got all these thoughts that are assailing me, that are battering me." That's one reason young people like to play music loud, because when they play loud music, they can't think. They literally can't think. It blasts out those thoughts, and they can actually study better with music playing than when not, because the music is less distracting than the thoughts they're having. So it's a time of dilemma, and that's when people say they're bored, when they measure time passing, and time seems to pass very slowly when we're noticing our thoughts. However, when we're turning our attention away from thoughts, when we're focusing deeper and deeper, going deeper into the breath or into the mantra, whatever object of attention we're using, it's not that the thoughts stop, but we're no longer paying attention to them. The way I put it is, if there were a hot springs right next to you and it's bubbling, you're well aware of it. It's just bubbling and bubbling. But if you see a friend 100 yards away that you haven't seen in years and you run up to them to greet them, the hot springs hasn't necessarily stopped bubbling, but you no longer notice it. So it feels like time goes more quickly. We go into these states of absorption where because normally we measure our sense of time with thoughts. And when we're not aware of the thoughts, when we turn our attention elsewhere, time seems to go quickly, where someone can meditate for 20 minutes or half an hour and it feels like the snap of a fingers. Yes. And that's why time seems to change in deep absorption of meditation. But it's not stopping the mind. We're simply no longer giving thoughts our attention.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah, and I think your emotional state really has an impact on how you perceive time, doesn't it? Because, like you say, if you're feeling happy and you're content or something exciting or new is happening to you, then time just seems to pass more quickly. But about meditation in everyday life, because do you think that eventually meditation shouldn't be seen just as something that you do for 20 minutes each day, but maybe it become a process of being aware in everyday life and noticing your thought patterns, your emotions, being conscious of your breath and all of that stuff, rather than just a specified time during the day where you sit down and that's meditation? It can be a lot broader than that, can't it?
Absolutely. In fact, in this approach to living, I call the way of the peaceful warrior, which is about living with a peaceful heart and a warrior spirit. Daily life is our school, and that is our practice. So it's not a matter of just trying to meditate for a few minutes a day, and then we finally open our eyes and we're the same rascals we were before we closed our eyes to meditate. It's a matter of integrating what we've learned into our daily life, because that's really where we live. We don't live in a sitting position, most of us. So I would agree with you completely that there is a transition type of meditation, which I call dynamic meditation. It's been called by many names, and it's in the Zen tradition. They have these Zen arts, Kudo, which is the art of archery, flower arranging, the tea ceremony. These are ways to turn a ceremony, turn movement into meditation, where it's completely conscious and yet egoless. Like in Zen archery, there is no one shooting the arrow. It's all done almost with the body wisdom. We learn to think with the whole body without a sense of an eye doing the shot. So that is a transition into daily life. I don't actually do a formal meditation practice, sitting meditation every day. I haven't for some years. But my everyday life has become a form of meditation where I'm no longer in conflict with my thoughts or emotions. I accept them as they arise. I notice them, much as I might in meditation, but they no longer have a hold over me. And that's one of the purposes of meditation, to get some distance or freedom from thought and emotion, where I behave consciously. I can behave with compassion whether or not I'm feeling compassionate. I can behave with courage whether or not I'm feeling courageous. So I'm no longer at the affect. I'm no longer driven or dependent upon what thoughts or feelings I have. I can behave in such a way. That's why I call, by the way, the Peaceful Warrior's Way the way of action. It's no longer waiting to fix our insides so that we can go out and live. And so daily life at that point becomes our meditation.
That's interesting. I think that's
Let me add one more thing by saying that just as a beginner uses the breath as the object of attention, as a discipline in beginning meditation or counting, they do that too. It's called Shikantaza in the Zen tradition, or using a mantra by repeating it and putting our attention on that rather than thoughts and emotions arising. Daily life can become our object of meditation. Shoma Morita, a Japanese psychiatrist, once said, "When passing by a mirror, notice the frame." So few of us do. We're so focused on looking at ourselves, but by looking around us and paying attention to everyday life, that makes a huge difference. There's one short scene in Way of the in the Peaceful Warrior movie, for example, when Joy's character says to Dan in the movie, "Are you paying attention?" She didn't just mean, "Are you paying attention to me?" Though I'm sure there are many women who would like to ask their significant other that question. This is a general question. Our attention is either going to go out into the world, noticing the beauty of the world around us moment to moment. Even the litter in the street has a certain beauty. Or our attention is going to be trapped in our internal mutterings to ourselves. What am I going to do about my relationship, about my money situation, about my health factor? And we tend to live in this subjective world, trapped, instead of looking around at the relative simplicity of the world unfolding moment to moment around us.
That's very interesting, yeah. So it's kind of like creating that space. So you can take a step back from your mundane thoughts and emotions and be able to acknowledge them, but also to be able to detach yourself from them when necessary.
Exactly. I treat my emotions the way I treated my daughters when they were young. I paid attention to them. I learned from them. I honor them and I cherish them. They were part of my life, an important part. But I don't let them take over and run the household.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least
analogy.
Not all the time.
Well, Dan, I think that's a good place to leave it. You've given lots of information to people who are just starting out, and I think sometimes we can have information overload, so it's a nice chunk of time that we've used there, and I know you must be busy, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So I'd like to really thank you for joining me, and I appreciate you agreeing to do this interview.
I did lay quite a bit of material on people, and it was a pleasure. I hope some people benefit from it.
I'm sure a lot of people will. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.